into this first session on Joshua is a tie back to our other session that we've had. So we're going to look backwards just a little bit today. As we get started in Joshua, we're going to look back at what the whole book of Joshua is all about and how it ties into our study a little bit in Proverbs and about Solomon. Now, what was Solomon's downfall?
Lust.
Okay, and what, that's exactly right. And what did Solomon physically do that was so terrible that we studied? What was his, what did he, I know he had a thousand wives, but I mean outside of that, what did he do? He did some pretty terrible things. Yeah, you do.
Which one? More than one.
Yeah, but it was, you know what he was doing, Betty, outside of his wives.
The idols?
Yeah, that was the big deal. That was the you know, in 1 Kings chapter 11, it tells all about how he allowed every wife that he had worship, or not every one of them, they were in groups, they worshiped different idols, and some of them were even those that burned their children, you know, to the idols. Some of you would have been missing to those sessions that we had on that. But anyway, idol worship. He just decided to do this, decided to worship their gods to please them. How can we do this? And this is not on the lesson today, but this week it grieved me so bad when I was listening to the Today Show this Friday morning, and they were interviewing Norman Vincent Peale's wife, and she has, which is great, she has started giving away his book, The Power of Positive Thinking. I'm sure it's a great book. And I believe in positive thinking and all that. But she said, Katie Kirk was saying, well, you know, it's really, what do you do about people who are not Christian? Not everybody's a Christian. How do you, say so much about Christ in your book? And Miss Peale said, it just appeals to everybody. She said, one time my husband got a call from a man who was in the hospital and he was really down, and somebody gave him the book and he was reading the book and it was just wonderful. It was meeting all his needs. And he said, but he had this problem. He said, he called up Dr. Peale and said, I have this problem with your book. In it you talk about Jesus all the time, and I'm Jewish and I don't believe in Jesus. And Dr. Peale said, don't worry about that. Said, you don't worry about that. Just take that out. And just substitute whatever you want to in there. Substitute God or your higher power. And it just cut me like a knife. What is that? That's no more better than what Solomon was doing. Jesus gave his life for us. He came down here and he died for us. And that we would negate it like that and say, oh, well, that's all right. You know, you don't have to pay attention to Jesus. He's nothing. Just substitute the name. Just give him another name and worship that. It's all right. Give that power to anything you want to call it. And she went on to say that. She said, just say your higher power. When I understand what she means as higher power, I know what she is saying. She's trying to compromise. And she really still means God and Jesus. I believe that about her. But what is she doing? Anyway, you know, this is our book, our study of Joshua has got to be centered on what it does for us. We'll look at some history and we'll learn some history. But the main thing has got to be, what does Joshua say to me? The book of Joshua says to me that I must keep walking. I cannot rest. I cannot put it down. I cannot compromise. I cannot, just because I'm old, just because I have done it for years and I get tired, I can't do that. I must keep walking. If I lay it down, if I compromise, I will become like Solomon. I will become like Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, who said it didn't matter.
And you know, he brings up of how I know that.
And I know he had good intentions. But good intentions, how can we take Christ off the cross with good intentions? What does that say about us? I wonder what Jesus thinks about that. To say you don't matter. What you did doesn't matter. You didn't have to come. You didn't have to do that, Jesus. It was all already okay before you came. That's exactly what she's saying. It wasn't necessary. Because everything was just fine before you got here. After all, we had God. Isn't that what she's saying? We had God. What do we need you for? And God's enough.
Do you think possibly that we thought by continuing to reach with them that they might change their mind?
I think there's probably all kinds of wonderful motives in what she has to say and do. That I have no doubt about that. Like I said, I know she's a Christian woman, and I know he is too. It's that sometimes in our desire to placate people, is that the word? Or to pat them on the back, make them feel good about themselves, we forget to realize that God is not in that. God does allow punishment to come to those, judgment to fall. He does allow bad times to happen in order for us to learn the truth, the real truth. And sometimes we have to face that truth, and we can't pat it all away, and we can't compromise it all away just to make them feel good about themselves. A Jew is going to hell just as sure as the atheist if they don't accept Jesus. But that's okay. The slothfulness we studied in our last study on Proverbs, but let's turn there right quick. Proverbs 24. Proverbs 24, verse 30 through 34. I went by the field of the slothful. We spent 2 weeks on this. Went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. And lo, it was all grown over with thorns and nettles and covered the face thereof. The stone wall was broken down. Then I saw and I considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed, traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. This we studied. This does not mean someone who is lazy. It is talking about the spiritually lazy man. All of those are spiritual things. We studied that for 2 weeks. But the folding of the hands, the sleep, the saying, this doesn't matter, it's perfectly all right. But you all know how easy it is for this kind of thing to come upon us. We know that. This is one of our battlegrounds. In Joshua, we're going to study about battles, individual battles, and how God came to pass on those, to work for them on the battles. Our life should be a battle. If you're not having a battle in your life of some kind, what's wrong? Let me ask you, hey, are you being a Dr. Norman Vincent Peale? You have no battles, you're compromising everything, there's nothing to battle. If everything is hunky-dory, absolutely everything is hunky-dory, there's something wrong. Really, there's something wrong spiritually. Because if you are walking with God, your life is full of things that need God to deal with. In your life and in the lives of others. If you have compromised everything and you don't care about anything, then you see that everything is all right. You know, it's okay that my kids don't know the Lord. Ah, it's okay. You know, you know what I'm saying? Who cares? They'll get by. Who cares if Uncle Joe doesn't know the Lord? I don't care. That's his problem. I got my own. You understand what I'm saying? If you have no battlegrounds, it means you don't care. We all have got to have our battlegrounds. Now, there is a difference in worrying and being anxious in your battles and going through them with peace, which is prosperity, or going through them in poverty. Now, prosperity means a straight path. It means the boulders are taken out and the road is straight. There's no curves and there's no mountains. There's no sudden, you know, how you can be driving down a road you don't know, and all of a sudden you get to a curve in it, and you didn't know it was going to be there, how frightening that is, and you're going too fast. Y'all know how that is, especially at night when you can't see good. As you get older, none of us can see as good as we used to. That's scary. Well, that's not prosperity. Prosperity means you don't have to worry about those hidden curves. God's in control, and he's driving the car, and he's taking all the rocks and all the potholes out of it. poverty is when it means it's full of chuck holes and it's full of big rocks and it's hard to get around them. And it's hard. Everything is full of surprises and problems, and you chew your fingernails all the way through. Well, when we walk with Joshua through the book of Joshua, we're going to learn that God takes all the potholes out, but the battle is still there. The battle is still there. I want us to take a mental note of the battles that we have going on in our life. Anything that you can think of that you would consider a battle. A lost loved one is a battle. Not enough money is a battle. The job's not going right. That's a battle. People don't like me. That's a battle. People, I have a...
It's four.
We're in World War II. I better not go into 5, 6, and 7. I won't go any further. Yeah, I will. Our kids don't get along. Right, tell me, is this not a battle?
It's a battle.
For those of us who have got more than one, I mean, you know, if your kids are at war with each other, you're in a battle. How do I constantly have the wisdom to lead these children through their own Canaan? How do I do this? These are all battlegrounds. But they are not supposed to be war zones within our heart. Joshua must teach us the rest of God. The rest of God. And we have learned from Hebrews chapter 4, and we're not going to go there, but Hebrews chapter 4 tells us there is a rest left to man. A Sabbath rest. Sabbath and rest equal the same thing. Sabbath equals rest. Well, we have a rest. This is our Sabbath. It is not a big deal. You know, this is a day. We decide because we love the Lord and because we know how desperate we are to walk in peace and prosperity and in His will. We come here because we want to come here. We need to be here. But we are not here. Come on in, Helen. We are not. Have you still got the little doohickey? Have you still got our little doohickey? We are real glad you're here, and we're going to start studying in Joshua. We're just talking about it before we do. When we are going to learn that the rest of God means that we have allowed God to take over. In other words, He is our Joshua. When you go into a battle in prayer, which that's where the battle is, you have dictated Jesus Christ, not your higher power and not the Almighty Father. You have dictated Jesus Christ as your Joshua. He's your Joshua. You have prayed the prayer. Okay? You have prayed about it. You have done everything you can to talk to God about the problem. Before you leave that spot, even if this is the only thing that you talk about, we mentioned, what, 5 or 6 problems here. Okay, if you only take one into God Monday, if you only take one, you have prayed every way you can about that particular battle. You have discussed it till you cannot think of anything else to say about it. God knows everything that's in your heart about it. And you know now, you have tried to talk about it according to what His will is. You know what His will is. You have thought about the Scriptures. You know how He feels about it. And if you don't, you have asked Him to show you. Now, you have placed it in His hands, and physically imagine placing it in His hands. You know, mentally, do whatever you've got to do to try to turn this over to the Lord. Get it in His hands. Read all the verses on trust that you can find. And once you truly have been able to do that, I'm not saying you can do it the first time or the 10th time, but once you have finally done it, once it is in His hands, now you have experienced the rest of God. Because He is your Joshua, and it's just like He's gone into battle, and you're just kind of trucking along behind Him. You know, it's so funny because all you are is a trucker. That's really all you are. You don't really have to do anything except keep your ears open to listen. You have to, you know, when He says turn, you turn. When He says do, you do. But that's not a big deal because He never says anything you can't hear. That's a part of trusting too. He's going to talk to you when you need to hear it. You can hear. Doesn't the scripture say in John chapter 10 that you're his sheep and you hear his voice? Is he a liar? Don't tell me that everybody else can hear but you. You know, you've got ears too. You are his sheep, so therefore you can hear, because he doesn't lie. So he said you could hear, so therefore you can hear, so therefore you are hearing. So he goes and he does all the work, and you sit back and you do nothing. This week I had a child who wanted to buy something they couldn't afford, and they called me about it and they asked my opinion. What do you say to an adult child that can do what they want to do? No, you can't do that. You can't afford that. Don't you dare do that. You know, you don't do that. You just try to very sweetly, you know, show them all the reasons around doing it and not doing it. And then you have to say, but whatever you want to do. Oh, yes. And that's what I did. You know, the phone call took me by surprise. I didn't have all my little lists of things I was supposed to say. You know, I didn't know the call was going to come. I didn't know the subject matter. I got hit with it just like that. I had to come up with wisdom before I had a chance to pray. I am now being a wise mother. Okay, so I did all those wise things, but it wasn't what I wanted to do at all. One said, you idiot! Just where are you going to get that? You know, anyway, doesn't matter. I did what I felt like was right to do at the time. Turned out I was hearing, okay? I just did. You know how we do. We just do. We hope it's right. Okay, well, it was. So then I had to do something with me. What was I like? Tell me.
That's it.
Sure I was. I did what I was supposed to do, but now I realize I've got a battle. I didn't even know I had one. Now I got one. What is it? My kids might make a big mistake. That's a battle. I mean, if you don't think of those things as battles, you ain't been there. You know, this is a battle. My child's liable to make a big mistake. Okay, so what do? I've got a battle. I got to go do something. So I go in the room, and I talk to God, and I tell him how dumb this is. And, oh, he just can't let this happen. All right, and I visualize. I try to place this in his hands, you know. And I did. I did do that. And yesterday, I asked this child, I said, and by the way, what have y'all decided about this item? And she said, I'm not going to do it. And she told me all the reasons why she wasn't going to do it. And they were all the great reasons that I had prayed to the Lord about, all the reasons why this wasn't going to work, you know. God took care of it. He took care of it, and it was great. But that's just a little example of a battle. It was minor. It's not major. We have skirmishes all the time. Sometimes they're all-out wars. They're horrible, horrible battles. But Joshua can take care of every one of them. The main thing is that we've got to recognize that they're battles. Instead of doing the natural human thing of worrying. That is our natural impulse, is to worry about it. I just can't believe it. And call up, you know, Sister Sue and Joe Blow and say, can you believe what's happening in my life now? Can you believe what happened? Do you know who called me today? Do you know? You know, we do that kind of thing. And then by the time we know, everybody knows about it, and our nails are gone, and we've lost 5 pounds, and it's just, you know, it's just terrible. That's battling it yourself. That's acting like Joshua. Well, I'm going to tell you that you ain't got the sense to be Joshua. You don't have what it takes to be Joshua. And every time I try to be Joshua, which I do, and you do too, I lose my battle. My walls of Jericho don't fall.
Yeah, they fall on you.
No, exactly. Instead of imploding, they outplode. That's exactly right. I am no good as a Joshua. I do not have any sense. I truly don't. I don't know how to do battle, and I don't do it well. And we have just got to learn not to do that. The rest, look at Philippians 4, 6, and 7. This one you're going to look at. I know you know it by heart, but it's one of those verses that you can never read too often. You can never say it to God too often. Also a very hard little book to find. It's right before Colossians.
Philippians
Philippians 4, 6, and 7. Be careful, be full of care for nothing. It doesn't say, now you can be anxious about your kids, because after all, that's okay. But you can't be anxious about your job. Or you can be anxious about money, because after all, everybody's going to be anxious about money. But you can't be anxious about, you know. You see, he says, you cannot be anxious about anything. He doesn't leave anything out. He says there is nothing that you can be anxious about. He doesn't want us to be anxious about anything. All right, be anxious about nothing, but in everything, everything, by, and how does he say is the cure for being anxious about nothing? It says prayer, supplication, and thanksgiving. It's got to go all hand in hand. And it doesn't just mean you go in by rote and you talk about it, you beg for it, and then you say, thank you, God, you're going to take care of it. If you don't truly trust your Joshua to take care of it, then it wouldn't do you any good to thank him for it. That's just words. Y'all got what I'm saying? No, let's stop praying. Just words. How often do we find ourselves doing that? Filling up space? Anybody here fill up space? You know, how important is that? I mean, I might as well say a Hail Mary. Well, I mean, just, you know, just author or an Our Father. You know, these memorized prayers. God never said we were supposed to do that. We are supposed to pray from our heart, the thing that matters. If you can't thank him for it, don't do it. Wait till you can. Wait till you know that he's going to. Say, I want to be able to. Help me to be able to. That's the real thing. Help me to give to me that thankful heart. Give to me that knowledge. Work the miracle. Is he not a miracle working God? If he isn't for you, then you need to start from scratch. Start asking him to show you what he can do, no matter how little it is. Because he can do everything, even change your opinion. Isn't that wonderful? To know that even when you've got a bad attitude about something, or a bad opinion about something, or a lack of trust about something, he can even work a miracle to do that. All it takes is you're asking him to do so. And if you don't have the faith it takes to believe it, ask him to give you the faith to believe that he can do something for you. Because faith comes from him. It's a gift. If you don't believe me, look up the gifts. You'll find faith is there. The fruit is faithfulness. The gift is faith. And it didn't come from you anyway. So if you lack faith to believe in anything, even in him, he can give you the faith to believe in anything that he wants you to believe in. So it's all him. Everything boils down to him. So anyway, back to Philippians 4, be careful for nothing, everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. Let your request be made known unto God. Then, after you've done all that, the peace of God comes upon you, and now you are in rest. Does it mean you don't do anything more when you're in rest? Rest has nothing to do with laziness or not caring. If you have a loved one that is not saved and you have placed them into the hands of God and you now have peace about it, does it mean that you don't care anymore? Does it mean they can go to hell in a handbasket and you you're just fine?
No, it means you've done all you can do. You can't do anything else.
You can't, but how do you feel about it?
I still care.
You still care, and you look forward to the day. You know God's told you. He's promised you in your heart. You've got that peace that God's going to take care of it. So in your heart, you know it's going to be all right. You don't not care anymore. Not caring is the worst thing in the world, is indifference about something. Is that not true? You just don't care about anything. You just don't care. Someone's house burns down and you just don't care. Do we find ourselves in that position a lot? Oh well. So-and-so died. Oh well. So-and-so's sick. Having a hard time. Oh well. We do find ourselves there a lot. If they're not in our little circle, who cares? We won't admit that though. We do. It's hard to admit that we can be that callous, but some of us can do that. But the thing is that God can change absolutely everything. He can make us care. He can give us something to do about it, but it is not inactivity. Rest is not inactivity. It just means that God is in control. And you will follow and do everything Joshua tells you to do. Joshua told them to march around the walls so many times. Well, in your resting, you may be marching around some walls. Whatever it is God tells you to do. But you're not going to do it fretting. You're going to do it in rest. That's the rest of the Lord. Now, our Sabbath is not today. I'll get back to that. It's not today. Our Sabbath is how often? Every day. We are walking in the Sabbath rest. We should be. Every day. You get up every day. Is Sunday any different for you outside the fact that you go to church? You should get up every day and pray. Every day and praise. Every day and read your Bible. What should be different on Sunday except that you go to learn? Or you have a place to meet with fellow believers to shore each other up, to help each other, to give you more opportunity for outward praise with others. But what's different about today? There isn't anything. Every day is the day that we worship the Lord, that we praise. Every day. No different. Now, as a Christian, I should have, my Monday should not be any different than my Friday. My Friday should not be any different than my Saturday. My Saturday should not be any different than my Sunday. There should be no day that is different. Every day is 100% dedicated to serving the Lord. Every day is a Sabbath. Every day is worship. Every day you don't do the same thing. Paul, you don't wash clothes every day of the week, do you? Do you go to work every day of the week? Every day of the week? Every day of the week? That's right. You don't go to work every day of the week. See, every day is not the same in our physical activity. But every day in our spiritual activity should be exactly the same. And we're talking, now God did give us a day of rest. And we can talk about it along that line too. It is important that we have one day a week that we don't do the same old thing all the time. It is important for you to lay down on the couch and take a nap once in a while. It is important for you one day or 2 days a week to sleep in a little bit. It is important, even when you're on a diet, is it not, one time when you're on a diet to treat yourself to something that you wouldn't ordinarily. You know, we know those things. It's nice to do something a little different just to help you out. But in the spiritual realm, every day's the same. God's God. He is important. And we must keep walking. If we don't, we will become like Solomon. And I want us to look at David. David in 2 Samuel chapter 11. You know, I think it's really important that in 2 Samuel 11 and in 1 Kings chapter 11, we've got the fall of both of them. Y'all know what the number 11 means? 2 Samuel 11. The number 11 means judgment. And in 1 Kings 11, we studied how Solomon fell by idol worship and was judged. And in that chapter, God says the kingdom is taken away from you, from the lineage. And in 2 Samuel 11, we've got David's judgment. Are y'all at 2 Samuel 11? And it came to pass, after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab. But David tarried still at Jerusalem. Isn't that interesting? At the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab, but he stayed home at Jerusalem. That's our problem. That's my problem, and that's your problem. When we ought to be doing battle, we just don't. We tarry still at Jerusalem. We just don't. We don't fight. We don't stand and fight for it. We just let it go. You know, you don't have to do battle. You don't have to stand for what's right in your life spiritually or in the lives of those that you should be interceding for. You don't have to do it. You don't have to intercede for anybody. Do you? Helen, you don't have to pray for Amy at all, do you? Of course you don't. I mean, you know, there's no law saying thou shalt. And if thou don't, thou art going to burn in hell forever. It's no big deal. We don't have to do any battles that we don't want to. And that's the problem. That's the problem. Is that if... so hard to get to talking. I just want to sit there. Yeah. I do. I just zone out. And I get to thinking. And before I know it, the clock has ticked around. It's 30 minutes. And I haven't even said hello to God. Tell me. I know exactly. You all don't have to fight any worse than I have to fight. People think it comes easy for me. It does not come easy.
My problem is that I can't pray at night when I lay down. In the morning, I get up and I...
You're a morning person.
But at night, when I lay down, I don't even drink
Well, that's good. That's good. Everybody to their own thing. I've talked to people who can't do it in the morning. I don't care. You know, it's just whatever. But, I mean, we all have our problems in getting it going, getting it in gear. It is a fight. It is a battle just to get it going. But we don't have to do anything. We can just slide. And Hebrews says, don't let your faith slip. And when you look up that word slip, it's like it's the context of it in the Greek is a ship that has come up to the dock, and it's kind of like you tie a horse, the old cowboys that come up to the hitching post and then jump off that horse. I always used to be fascinated by that when I was a kid. I used to pretend like that. I'd jump off my horse and I'd throw my thing and I'd throw it around, and they always go two or three times around that hitching post, you know. I always wondered, how'd that horse not just get off? Just get away. There was no knots tied. But they just slip it around there. Sometimes they don't just kind of throw it over. Of course, that was the movies. I bet if it had been real life, that horse had been long gone. But anyway, that's the way the Bible says. Don't let that happen. Don't let your horse come off from the ship, from the hitching post. Don't let your ship get off the tie at the dock. If you don't tie it right, it's going to just, the current's going to just carry it on downstream. And that's the point of Hebrews is... Hebrews says you can fall from grace, you can lose your salvation. And that's our danger. If we don't study the book of Joshua and learn how to find battles to fight, and fight those battles through the power of the Lord, and get back to God and see Him as our Joshua, and care that there's giants in the land. I mean, you know, we get where we don't even care. Well, I don't care. You know, there's drugs and alcohol on your street. There's a murder down the road. You know, I don't care. Not any in my house, so I don't care. Don't care about anything. We get so complacent. We get so I don't care-ish. We're not praying for anything. We're not praying about anything. Nothing is important anymore. All we care about is getting up, going to work, coming home, cooking supper, going to bed, getting up, cooking breakfast, cooking supper, going to work, coming home, going to bed. Tell me if that doesn't happen to us, that we just get zoned out on our own little 24-hour block, and I don't give a darn about you, and you don't give a darn about me, and we just live our little life, and we don't talk to nobody and don't want to. Does anybody know anybody like that? Can you understand what I'm saying? This is dangerous. This is dangerous. I see it in my life. I see it in my life when I get up to pray and I've spent 30 minutes zoning out on nothing. And before I know it, it's time for me to get up and go to work. And I haven't interceded for anybody. I haven't done anything. I have called it prayer, but actually what it was just me trying to get waked up. I can pat myself on the back and say I sat there. But what good is that?
Maybe they didn't need you that day.
Yeah. No, I know my battles. I know. I am just as guilty as anybody of being spiritually lazy. And if I don't watch out, I'm going to have my wall is going to be broken down. I'm going to have nettles growing in my field. And my ship can come right off of that dock just like anybody's. And before I know it, everybody I know is going to go to heaven but me. And as Paul said that, he knew that could happen to him. Can you imagine that happening to Paul? Of course not. But Paul knew it could, and that's why he didn't let it. Isn't that right?
But you know, he could have talked a little plainer, like the...
Mother's got this thing about Paul.
It drives me crazy. I read this sentence and I think, what under the shining sun is he talking about? Yeah. Others didn't write like that. How do you make it so impossible to know what he's saying? And I've got a new study Bible that Billy Graham sent me. And I thought it would be easier.
Mother and Paul don't get along very well.
I'm going to ask you why.
I hope it could be so hard.
How difficult it was to understand.
Back to 2 Samuel 11. Joab went to war, and David stayed in Jerusalem. And he was not, it said, when the time for kings to go forth to battle, he stayed in Jerusalem. He did not go battle. He took time off. And we know that the next few verses talk about how he walked out onto his rooftop, and he saw Bathsheba taking a bath. And now, how did he see Bathsheba taking a bath? Where was Bathsheba?
She was on her rooftop.
No, you know, I always thought that. I always thought all he had to do was just kind of look across, you know, and there she is where she shouldn't be either, you know. But that's not true. I found out today and looking, she was in her courtyard where she should have been. She was minding her own business. Their courtyard was where they did that kind of thing. And the only way he could see her was because he was above her looking down. I like that. Really and truly, Bathsheba. I mean, you know, how are you going to tell the king? I mean, she could have, but I'm not going to put too much blame on poor old Bathsheba. You know, the king was where he shouldn't have been. He shouldn't have been on his rooftop. And he was looking down. It was kind of like, you know, going to a motel that's got a hole in the shower. Y'all know that there are such things. Anyway, somebody was looking, and he shouldn't have been. So, David was where he should not have been. And if we don't watch it, that's what's going to happen to us. But there is a verse, and I didn't look it up, but there is a verse that talks about David being the friend of God and that his heart, and we've got to remember this, you and I may fall into sin, and we do. Okay? Anybody here not a sinner? I want to see your hand. Okay. We are all sinners every single day. We all know our own personal weaknesses. But the Bible says that the thing that God loved about David was his heart. His heart. And that's all that God looks at. That's all. He is not interested in what you did. He wants to know what your heart attitude is about it. And the thing that was the difference between Solomon and the difference between David was that heart. Nobody was as close to God as David, it was because his heart. He had a heart that loved God and that grieved over his sin. And we've got to do the same thing. We've got to be the same way. And when others sin, we've got to not look at what they did. We've got to love them and forgive them and look at their heart. That's all that God's interested in. So, that's enough on David, but when we get, let's talk to Joshua. Let's see. Let's go to Joshua 24. We're gonna, anybody here besides me read a magazine backwards? I start on the last page and go to the front. You do too. RJ, who else does it?
I do.
Go back to the front. There are a lot of people that do that. Just go back.
I read the front page, but then I try
go to the back and come back. I don't know what in the world's wrong with us, but we're going to do that with Joshua today. We got 5 minutes, and I guess that's what we'll do. And Joshua chapter 24 is a real good chapter. But this is what Joshua is saying. He's 110 years old, and he's fixing to lead these people in the land. He's got them in there, and he's telling them that if you want to stay here, you got some work to do. And let's look at verse 13. This is God talking. I have given you a land for which you did not labor, cities that you built not, and you dwell in the vineyards and olive yards which you planted not, are you eating out of. Now therefore fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. Now I looked at that, And on the other side of the flood, they had the teraphim of Mesopotamia. And in Canaan, they had animal worship. No, in Egypt, they had animal worship. And in Canaan, they had idol worship where they burned their children. Those are the three kinds of gods that they had come through in their experience that other people serve. Verse 15, and if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day who you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, or and come on down, but as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord, Joshua saying. And the people answered and said, God forbid that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For the Lord our God, he it is that brought us up out of our fathers, out of the land of Egypt, the house of bondage, and which did those signs in our sight and preserved us and so forth, okay? And then verse 18, he says, we're going to serve the Lord. He is our God. And then God says, and Joshua says in 19, you cannot serve the Lord. He is a holy God. He's a jealous God. And he wants your total commitment. All right? And then they go on in 21 and they say, we're going to serve the Lord. All right? And so Joshua sets up a stone as a witness. And he says, this stone is saying that you are going to, that you have said you will put away strange gods from you and you will not serve them. Well, that is the danger. It was the danger for Solomon, and it is a danger in Canaan. It was their downfall. In the 1700 BC, Israel was taken away captive into Assyria because idol worship. They did it. They did all of it. Every bit of it. We studied that in Proverbs about Solomon. They had their high places. They sacrificed their children. They had their prostitutes. They had the whole bit, and they served God too. Just like Norman Mincipil. Oh, all right. You take your God and call him what you want to, and here's mine, and we'll just get along together. It's what's wrong. We have got to get a little more narrow-minded. Just to, you know, not on the person. We love the person. We hate the sin. We pray for the person. We do battle for them. We intercede for them. And we don't let it into our lives either. What's your idol? Well, some of us have got an idol out of our work. Some of us have got it out of our kids. Some of us got it out of our husband. Joshua had it out of Moses. Next week, our first thing is we're going to say, it says, now Moses was dead. Now get up and go, Joshua. Finally, Moses is dead. And you know that happened to Isaiah. When Uriah died, Isaiah saw the Lord high and lifted up. Why? Because Uriah was in his way. He was his idol. He had to get out of the way. What is your idol? It can be a person. It can be a thing. It can be money. It can be anything. But we will look at our idols, and those are our battles. Let's pray. And Betty, would you close us?
Thank you.